Thank you, Chairman. Kindly sent out a number of questions pertaining to certainly adults' social care. I was really pleased to get them because some of the things that you're asking are really important. So if I may, I'll go straight to them. You did, in terms of what Paul sent out, ask me a few questions with regards to the STP. I suggest we can go back to that if you wish. And there's certainly also some questions around sexual health, public health nursing. And I'm not proposing to answer those questions which are out with my area. So the first one with regards to my area was on paper just for people's ease, although no questions came from this committee, which is on paper F25. And the question, and basically within that report, I have written that in terms of integration around adult social care and health, that there's been a certain level of increase in risk in terms of immediacy of decisions needed around the depth and breadth of integration, but mainly because new targets for adult social care have been set by NHS England, which will be difficult to achieve. So your question was around difficult to achieve. If you don't wish me to repeat why you've asked the question, please do let me know that. Well, I don't know whether all of you have in front of you what I've seen from Paul at the end of last week. So the difficult to achieve targets, firstly, is that delayed transfer of care targets for adult social care have been further heightened, stretched, I guess is the word, by 40%. Whereas our target was at 4.58 per 100,000 for people suffering from a delayed transfer of care, the target now by NHSE on adult social care has increased to 2.6. That's a 40% increase. I'm really pleased to say that actually throughout June and July and April and May preceding that, we had not only hit that target but exceeded it. However, it's fair to say that since during August, and I'm waiting for the September data, but I know that we will have failed to reach our target, our new target of 2.6. It's a really a 40% increase in your target is, I would suggest, quite a large increase in the target. That is what I wrote there. In addition, on the 13th of June, Paul and Philip wrote out to all chief execs of trusts, accountable officers of CCGs, and directors of adult social care around targets, a national target of 25%. For the reduction of those patients in hospital experiencing an extended length of stay. And of that 25% national target, local targets were given, ours is 26% reduction by December. And within that 26% reduction target, half is given to the acute trust deliver, but what it also says is that half of the achievement of that target will be shared by other partners, which includes adult social care. Those other partners, according to Philip's letter, are set out as being CCGs, GPs, adult social care, and others. So again, what we know here locally is that we do have large numbers of patients in the hospital who have lengthy stay. The intent of the policy absolutely is the right one. If people do not need to be in a hospital bed for all sorts of reasons, but I'm afraid I will always come principally from their own as patients, they should not be there because we do know that harmful effects can impact upon those patients. So it's for those reasons that I've said the targets will be increasingly difficult to achieve because we've been set such a stretch target. I'll stop there unless you've got any questions before I move on to the next one.
Questions? No.
Okay, the next one, again, is on page 25, and it pertains to the care board what I wrote there is that we've been asked to undertake work around place-based conditioning. And the rest of the paragraph on F25 I've written there is about our work around place-based conditioning. And basically, within that, Gillian Baker and myself, Gillian obviously from the CCG, back in May, took paper with the care board around place-based conditioning, and we took a further paper actually only last week. To the care board. The first paper, and as indeed the second one does, it defines base commissioning, and it talks about whether the local care board, which Gillian and I and working also some funding very kindly made available with Paul Gray, to extend what place-based commissioning will be. But the joint post that's there is talking around the fact that we knew at that juncture that Maggie McIsaac was talking about not only having a single leadership team across all of the five Hampshire Partnership CCGs, but that each of those areas, and they are like being one of the five now, having managing director, and that position is currently it's occupied by Martin, who's with us here this evening. And the role that we asked for earlier in the year was whether that post, we should explore looking at, should it be a joint post across the council with the CCG. We took a further paper last week, as I've already said, for the local care board, saying this is what could be in place-based commissioning from both the council's perspective as well as from the local NHS perspective. And we were asking for agreement for the local care board around that. We were informed absolutely, go ahead and over the next few months now, although I don't think it's going to be as long as that, re-explore putting those services in. What would be the benefits in terms of better outcomes for local people? What the sums of money we're talking about in terms of what's going through those different commissioning elements? And also whether we needed to look at having a single joint post. There has been a separate piece of work commissioned by the local care board around a 12-week roadmap about what would need, what could integration across health and care look like. And what's been agreed is that commissioning arrangements for that will be part and parcel of that wider piece of work. An independent consultancy, Carl Farah, have been working very intensively across the system at the minute to look at the local integrated care system as the chief executive was describing a little earlier on. What could that look like for us here on this island? Indeed, of what it could look like, what would be the resource flows, what would be the pathways for those who serve, what would be the benefits of doing this. I do want to say, in terms of just personally, from where I've come from, in integration, if you approach it, it's only about saving money. The evidence is highly equivocal in terms of whether it saves money, but what integration has done unequivocally in a number of areas is to improve outcomes within that same limited resource envelope. So that's where we are. With that, I'm happy again to pause.
Carol, thank you very much. Your reports are really comprehensive, full of statistics, easy to read and easy to understand. Are there any questions from members, or have we got a clear picture on that? If not, under the performance management issue, there is a general point that I'd like to bring to people's attention, and it does really not just concern one organisation. I think it's something that we all need to take note of, and it was a finding by the Ombudsman recently where an allegation had been made against an individual, and that allegation wasn't properly investigated. The person who had the allegation made against them wasn't even questioned, as I understand it. It happened on the island, and it involved a local service, and I think it's something that we all need to be very, very careful of, because in my own personal experience, I found that to be a regular occurrence where allegations or complaints are made, and people, and they're not properly investigated, they're not investigated in context.
Chair, from an adult social care perspective, in the last 12 months there have been six complaints which have gone through adult social care, which have ended up, as is absolutely people's right, they were taking that on to the Health and Local Ombudsman. Of those six, no fault whatsoever was found in adult social care in five cases, and in one case only was fault found in one element. So I'm really sorry, but I'm struggling to recognise what you've just said, certainly from an adult social care perspective.
That's why I didn't allocate it to one service or another, Carol. It was an important point, and it's not the only time in my experience that that's happened. I'm not saying that it happens every single day, but I think it is something that we all need to question ourselves on, and if we're satisfied that we are investigating properly, then a good job's been done.
One of the best officers, actually, Helen Barrington, is the person who investigates all of our complaints. The different local authorities and health services where I've worked, certainly Helen guards appropriately and fiercely her level of independence from services in terms of investigating complaints. We receive monthly very detailed reports about each of our complaints, and it's just in terms of the Ombudsman, what I would also remind everybody here is that the decisions of an Ombudsman are made public. So if the Ombudsman has found against any complaint, frankly, that not only would that be coming back to the relevant director in the local authority, chief exec accountable officer within our healthcare system, but actually it's placed on into the public domain. So that's what I'm saying. I know one fault which was found in one aspect of one complaint, but actually of six referrals to local government ombudsman by people themselves who absolutely have the right to do this, and it's, you know, it's, I'm really pleased that people do it, but of those six cases which has the ombudsman certainly come back to me as a director, and indeed has also placed onto the website. No,
Carol, I think the wider point I'm trying to make is that everybody should examine themselves and whatever they need to. You know, we're all operating busy services, and it's very easy, perhaps sometimes, to overlook things. So we need to be a little bit vigilant and learn by each other's mistakes. All right, we've got Carl and John.
I think Dr. Torza was going through the strategic risk, and she's still got the third one to deal with, which was the failure to provide acceptable quality and professional practice across adult social care, which is probably the one that our team is going to deal with.
Okay, so the questions are from the committee. The next one was absolutely around, has a paper on restructuring been completed? So what you'll see, this is page F26 and 27, committee members, of the report in front of you. And I don't mince my words, and the risk is around failure to provide acceptable quality professional practice across adult social care. And what I have said is that the rating remains the same, because while some actions to reduce risk have been completed, others have seen emerge. So, in terms of that, what risks have been mitigated? Our safeguarding action plan is routinely and at a slight distance monitored by the Safeguarding Adults Board, and that meets every 2 months. I take a report to that against we did an independent review of safeguarding practice that came up with recommendations. And actually, I'm really pleased to report good progress on that, to the extent that actually regionally, our work on making safeguarding personal is now being put up as an example of data and outcomes being monitored in a way in which it needs to, but that other local authorities are beginning to ask us questions about in terms of replicating. Where am I most worried? I'm most worried in two areas. The numbers of vacancies that I've got for social workers, and also embedding something called asset-based approaches in terms of just our philosophy around and our practice around social work. So another question down here, have we reviewed our forms? Yes, we have. In fact, I was at a meeting earlier this afternoon. In terms of giving to social workers tools which promote best practice rather than demand that of them, and they haven't got the right tools in order to be able to record. So we have completely revised our forms. I was shown the last version of them this afternoon. And I say last would mean before then going out to each of our managers and consultant practitioners to make sure that they're happy with it and they're more than crediting them. So I'm pleased about that. But the vacancies of my social workers and the use of agency staff is where I remain most worried. We have done a huge amount of recruitment activity, and I'll give you an example. So we're currently out for, and its closing date is not until Friday, and that's the 19th. But one of the vacancies which we're out for in terms of strengthening from my practice is for a further learning service manager, covering learning disability, mental health, and safeguarding. Of the 5 applications only that we've received to date, 3 don't even work legally. They shouldn't even come in because the people do not have the minimum level of qualifications which the job itself asks for. If we look towards social work vacancies, again, the social workers over here as well, again, in terms of vacancies we've got, we are struggling to get the right level of expertise and experience that the people we serve have a right to expect. So we're struggling, and our health colleagues are exactly the same, we're struggling to get the calibre as well as the quantity. So we need to be a lot more strategic about that in terms of how we begin to develop our own pipeline of supply. I'm going to be starting to go across, and as well as other managers, to give lectures in some of our social work local offers at Scotland and Portsmouth. So we need to talk about how can we do that. We need to be looking at, and I think we can learn children's services on the side of Franklin. We need to be looking at how can we really support certainly those social workers coming out of their degrees and then coming to work with us as newly qualified in their first year. But the key thing that we must have is really great managers. Because if frontline social workers are not safe in their practice, quite frankly, we will fail those we serve. So that's where I am most worried and where I remain worried. Great social workers are like hen's teeth. There are no national shortages of them. So we have to be able to differentiate our offer. We have to be able, and we've doubled almost our expenditure on learning development. I'm really proud of this. We did a first survey of our staff back in March 17, and we do them every single quarter. One of the questions that we ask of our staff from my colleagues is, are you getting access to the right level of learning development that you feel you need to do your job right? We've moved from a position where about only a third of frontline staff are saying that's the case to over 90% now. So we're moving forward and we look at the evidence, but that's where I remain most worried.
Thank you, Carol. Right, we've got Carl and John. Jeff, sorry. Add you to the list. Yeah. Carl, John.
Thank you. Actually, I think you've actually answered some of my questions. What's encouraging is the pipeline development. That is the future, and I'm really interested in the future. Of course, we've got an immediate problem now, but I would be actually saying to the Cabinet, we need to invest more into that, because it's very clear across all the disciplines, including within health, that if we don't grow our own local talent, if you like, and local population into these services, we will continue to be exactly where we currently are. So thank you for that, and I withdraw the other questions for that.
Can I just clarify, Carl, just to make you, to reassure, apart from that, we're doing the local care board is part of the one of the key tasks we're doing is workforce. So that's workforce, so we can start to grow our own across the whole system.
John.
Thank you, Chairman. I know we're on item 7. Is that not right?
No, performance management.
No,
10A.
But I was more interested, we didn't seem to get an answer on that, and we had two people from the public actually speaking on it.
Yeah, John, that's going to come later. We switched it round because two people got to leave early.
Right, if you'd like to just wait for me when it does come up.
Okay, yeah.
So, the question.
So, Jeff.
Sorry?
Jeff, can I just firstly make an observation?
Thank you.
You only meet four times a year, and we really need people to be here for the duration. And I know people have a couple of personal lives as well. But the committee only meets four times a year, being rushed through things, but they may have important issues to discuss. Particularly, and I'm looking at the NHS Trust and the CCG, that the last item in the magazine is going to have to go. That's not really satisfactory from my point of view. Moving on, though, I just like to refer to the fact this is the part of this committee's brief, adult social care, that perhaps doesn't get the coverage that it needs to. And given how much of the Arloway Council's budget is spent on adult social care, given how damaging bad reports on adult social care or children's social care can be to a local authority, we need to give this lot of priority that we really should. And the strategic risk paper, peers are experts, should expect from Dr. Tools that they're spot on. I mean, I've got no major question, but I would urge every member of the committee, if you don't read anything else, look at the strategic risks though, because that's where all I would ask Dr. Tools for is that, I mean, in the third element of it about professional practice, etc., she talks about in the very first paragraph on M26 about actions that reduce risk, and then in the next paragraph refers to restructuring. Be led by some leadership group. And then refers, quite unusually, I thought, for Dr. Torso, to current confusion. Perhaps you could enlighten us a little bit on what this current confusion might be. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm always very forthright in my reports, hopefully as being evidence-based. So I've mentioned that we need to implement something called asset-based approaches. There's been quite a lot of work on what's the theory about this. There's a lot of evidence of those other authorities who've already implemented it, but what it looks like and why it works. How we had introduced it here begun those discussions with staff and our colleagues, with the wisdom of hindsight, was not as clear as it needed to be. So the confusion was people still saying, actually, what does this look like and how are we going to do it when currently our forms, our assessment forms, our review forms, don't in any way mirror the theory of what we're saying, Carol, in terms of how we're moving forward. That was the confusion, and that was why I also have already said in response to the later question in terms of the assessment planning tools, what I have just done, which is we've done a complete review of the forms. And the next stage of that is to check what managers are themselves who will be reviewing against it, quality assuring against it, are happy with them.
Thank you, Carol. We'll move on to Maggie now because it's nearly 7 o'clock. Could you circulate the rest of the responses?
Thanks, John. I'll start by picking up that Maggie has to go over. And I would say I've never missed one of these meetings.